So, I guess I should probably apologize for giving you the spending the whole morning giving you the well-known doctrine of Sri Aurobindo. But
let's not apologize for that.
But anyway, there it is. Now the question is,
can we get ourselves integrated here in a circle? So we can hear each other easily?
Yeah, if this arc moved forward 3 feet, I think that would help.
Just push that.
There are a number of steps that could be taken. One step that could be taken, it would be beginning to try to ask questions around the integral paradigm, the emergence of the integral consciousness, and how it incorporates all of these levels. We could, in life, how our life is possibly changed by that possibility. We could discuss a bit the three different systems that we've looked at. We could explore, also if we've well integrated this information, we could actually explore applications.
Yeah, that's what is the most interesting one. Yeah. But it is working on ice.
So it's open anyway.
That's why when you start believing, because for all of us it is too far away, and at the same time it is too near. Because we have discussed this, the body itself is made out of it. It was the supernatural force which has conceived this. So it is too near. We are working with it and we are under that, constantly under that influence. And most of that influence we don't even know of. And we try to get at that influence by thinking, by thought, and by putting our attention somewhere. But it is always the wrong way that we put our attention, because it is under the spell of history. Mm-hmm. Now to open up to new things, and this force is so incredibly subtle that anything, even a thought, can shatter it. So how careful must you become with thoughts? Mm-hmm. And most of us, they are anyway in a carousel of thoughts. It's just turning around without stop. And one tries to, but one can't without that the thought cease.
So how do we allow that energy to create formations without interrupting with some old patterns?
Yeah, that's what. So now we see our millions all learning how not to think. Mm. No? Sitting there and learning how not to think.
So in Gebser, I think there's a point that where Gebser and Sri Aurobindo meet in that last slide. You know, where in that last slide where Sri Aurobindo says we have to take the risk of abdicating the mind. And Gebser says the emergence of the integral requires a mutation which has to be endured. And for that mutation to take place, one must be willing to leave aside every preconception and habit of living.
That's fantastic.
And so, but these two guys,
they
could say that, you know, that's one thing.
No, but you recognize, I mean, now I recognize how old these intellectuals are. And how old this intellect is, because it has lost all its pressure. It is not there. These are just rigid buildings. The most wide thought you might have, it's just the rigidity. Now, to recognize that is the first step. I happen to be in a very funny position because I gave up thinking and believing in thought when I was 19. I didn't want that. I didn't want to believe in that. So I lost. I became an idiot. And it was painful, you know. It is painful because you are among such such great people. And as soon as...
They always know what is right.
Yeah, and you kind of can't answer. You find yourself stupid. And to cope with them, you have to come on the same level. So Gebser and Sri Aurobindo, they had both. So Sri Aurobindo could answer any questions of any intellectual and tell him, no, this is like that, this is like that. And he entered within, and he was not thinking.
Aurobindo said in one of his books about the thinking, when you sit down and you want to think about something, you send away this thinking that comes and invades you. You tell them to go, and you decide what you are thinking.
Exactly.
You tell the thoughts that are coming without your acceptance to stay away, and you will later come back if you want to. But you can't concentrate, and you're not thinking.
But this is exactly the point that, at least in my work, I work in the art.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to choose the thoughts that project into the future something.
Mm-hmm.
That I know this thought is going to an unlimited source. They have to be unlimited, otherwise it's no use that we do it. And that's it, basically. So I don't think about things like that. When you come to it, when you come to a problem, then you create a thought which is not limited.
Mm-hmm.
Then you just send it on, and on the base of that, you integrate it in a kind of memory,
mm-hmm.
and then you dwell on it. That's what I can say. But I find that how do you do that on the road? We have this world which is outside of us, which is so hampering. I mean, I just need to go from here to Pondi, and I have clashes and encounters of planets, no? Things like that.
But if really you're just going from here to Pondi, and you're already there, and you're also here, and you have to meet some things along the way, the things which you meet along the way don't have any meaning, really.
Well, it depends. It depends. Sometimes the meeting stops and you have to meet someone.
But even when you do, it's just a step along the way, right?
Sort of. But then I think I just thought...
If you don't react to it.
You know, it is something weird. It's something strange because even the other part, which you meet, is the same as yours. And you shall meet me in the eyes of your enemies. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So every encounter is that, should be that encounter. That's what I've had to say.
Mm-hmm.
That encounter with that infinite idea.
I wonder whether we have this duality that pre-conscious is in the relative and the conscious is in the absolute. So we are somewhere in between. And as we can't be in the absolute, we always drop back to the relative. And while being in this relative, there's a contradiction which is hard to overcome. So what I wonder is, in this in-between area between heaven and sky and earth, what is the thing to happen? The absolute cannot happen, the relative happens automatically. So the absolute is always the exception.
You have to fly.
Yes.
There is no problem with that relativeness of being. It's a wonderful thing, by the way. And it can be discovered in terms of dynamic truth, which was in the Veda, a dynamism of truth. You can imagine that every moment, every encounter in the world you meet is of that surprise of the absolute and has a touch of a new dimension for you and your consciousness. Now, since we are looking from a rational structure, we can't see it because we are choosing, we are still in the process of thinking. But what is interesting, that the emergence of the mental being, Manomaya Purusha itself, is giving us opportunity not only to be in the carousel of thoughts, but also to disengage itself from that carousel and to use thoughts and to order them, to make order with thoughts, to choose which thought to think and which not to think. This is the capacity of this mental being. It's an amazing capacity. You, at will, can choose what to be. That's what Sri Aurobindo starts in one of his sayings. I chose to be this. That's why I made my... I wasn't a poet. I made myself a poet. I wasn't a philosopher. I made myself a philosopher. He could make himself whatever he wanted to be. This ability, this willpower of the Manomaya function is all what it is all about, this new structure emerging. And without it, there is no possible integration. As Gapsa says, without this concretion, concretion is to take place. We have to have concrete structures in order to integrate them in new possibilities. And if they do not emerge, if we are still amorphous beings, loving each other and having some idea about something, it doesn't work this way. It takes pains to create that concretion, yes. And at the end, it becomes useful and meaningful. Because we gain also that will to choose and to rearrange and to find ourselves free from those concrete things which we concretized.
So how then do you leave a little thinness of the veil in the concretion to go back to the mythical, to the image archaic, or do you sort of leave them behind and stabilize the concretion then of the mental and then somehow bring them up in another way so they're not lost as they're transformed?
Now this is what Gebsa is pondering about, because he can't step out from the mental structure. So he has to see it, and he introduces these mental ideas of diaphaneity, which are intuitional, but still. He can't figure out what it would be, because he doesn't see one will growing through the Sri Aurobindo. He doesn't see the soul's presence in the magic structure. He sees it differently, a little bit. He can't really figure out what it is. And according to Sri Aurobindo, from the beginning he sees this Vedic vision of the descent of fire, of agony into the darkness of inconscient, and bringing it back. It's a Vedic vision, where fire on every level builds up and the whole domain, life domain is built. With all those instincts and desires. And the desires of animals are nothing but latent aspirations of the soul. But that is in the Veda. Later it was lost. This knowledge is not seen. So he brings it back in some way.
Is this what, Rod, is that what you've drawn on?
Yeah, it is what is drawn there, because this fire is continuously streaming. It's not just once. Yeah. So that, and Sri Aurobindo uses that image in this book, The Human Cycle, quite a bit too. If we manage to rise above the vibrational constraints of mind, life, and body, we can receive this fire and then transmit it to the mind, the life, and the body. And then those instruments are always continuing to be there. And that fire has always been there. But the fire is too hot to touch them directly. So we have to create an intermediary vehicle so that the fire can enter the body and enter the life force and give it a new quality. And that's exactly the yoga of Sri Aurobindo, I think, is building that overmind channel so that the mind, the life, and the body can flame. And when that happens, then the magical structure is there already in place. And so, like this, the healing, you know, to have a will to heal someone, or for someone to be healed by readjusting their pattern in time and associations and all of that, you know, which we think of as a kind of a magical thing, but it's a good idea if it's possible, might just be the easiest thing in the world to do, because that way of functioning has already been established, even though nobody understood how it worked. And now it frightens us a little bit because we can't understand how it works, but we think we might be able to understand it. And so then we get caught in that pattern. So if it's possible, as Sri Aurobindo says, and he asks the question several times in that book, if we are right, if this can be done, then this follows. And if it can't be done, the human being won't survive. Explicit statement. So he says, you may say that this is a difficult solution and maybe no solution. But if it's not a solution, then there is no solution. So from the evolutionary standpoint, he declares it to be an inevitable necessity that this transformation takes place. From the metaphysical standpoint, he explains it as being an inevitable necessity, because all of existence is just this process. Nothing makes sense otherwise, from the metaphysical standpoint. But he does not pretend that it's an easy thing to do, or even that it's necessarily going to succeed.
How do you see things chronologically, like 40 years after he was writing the book and after his passing and possibly his marking from, how to say, another plane and the supramental manifestation and mother's yoga and the emphasis of her on something which we don't know exactly what she speaks about, consciousness of the cells or mind of the cells? Was there a turn or a certain re-emphasis, or how does that come into the picture in relationship to that evolutionary process we talked about?
Can I add to this one? Probably it comes also to the same thing, how that we have become conscious, how our mental expression and thinking has an effect. If you think about from Emoto from Japan, what they did, they concentrate on the dirty river in Japan, this dirty water with the concentration on life, and afterwards the crystal was totally clear. I mean, that is real proof, that is the conscious loving aspiration to one has changed.
So in this book, Sri Aurobindo says, it's unbelievable what will be possible. When that supramental force becomes available, has an instrument, says there's no limits to what it can do. That's why the future creation is interesting, because it's infinitely new and creative. But the difficulty is the transition. So someone like Sri Aurobindo can write thousands of pages about how it looks like it might become. And he sees it, no doubt. So then, you know, your question is, did something happen?
Yeah, that amazing emphasis of the mother.
According to her, something happened.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a...
Hello?
I don't know, in a way, the presence of the mother's force is a proof that life after death is a reality. But it's not life like life, but it's a continuous inundation of consciousness force, which is possible after death. So whether it's Sri Aurobindo or the mother or the combination or whatever it is, you know, everyone knows that there is a reality that's a result of their yoga that's different from ordinary reality. There's a force. And then you read Sri Aurobindo and he tells you what the purpose of that force is. But we have to somehow make a reality out of that. Because just as long as it's in the book and it's in the Matra Mandir, it's not what it potentially is. So, you know, there are indications that it's real, that the possibility is more than a possibility, and at the same time, there are all of the impossibilities that we face all the time.
But I think we have so many already documents about it, and I think about the film from Raymond Moody about life after death. I was so touched when I saw it, and the one, the Russian scientist was killed, and then he recognized his consciousness, I'm dead, and he was shocked, and then he said again, but I'm dead already, why I'm shocked? And then he finds a passage to light, and later he came back to life again. So, I mean, it is, you have so many documents, that it's already there, yeah?
Documents are no problem. And faith in the truth of the documents maybe also is no problem. But that doesn't change Earth life very much.
But it's a possibility to stop it. And sort of trying to reflect on this phenomena that as we speak, we share across this presentation, that naturally my mind, my rational being, is drawn into a certain direction and pointing in a certain direction. And somewhat, I'm assuming that has happened with others also. Mm-hmm. And when I hear different people speak, I even get confirmed in that, from my perspective, that we're being pointed in our mind space that we share, or in the field that we create here, or is created here, we're getting oriented towards something. In simplistic terms, I would call it beyond the mind. Whatever word you want to put on it, personally, I don't mind, but that's the way I translate it for myself. And the further I observe us going in that direction, that's my assumption, the harder it's for me to point the mind the other way around. And to actually bring that in. And I find that interesting too, that a collective field has an impact on me in terms of what I'm going to say and start to understand, what's the word for it, where you start to refrain yourself, censor myself from saying other things. So what I'm touching upon there is a thread of the aspect of me that likes to conform, that likes to stay with this direction of the sharing and this kind of space that we share. But I keep coming back to the directing the mind in the opposite direction, which is more towards the vital and physical. And to ask yourself this question, if we aspire that much in the mind to go beyond something, and not just the mind itself, the vital and the physical, what is it in the vital and the physical that we have not been able to embrace or to fully understand that I assume would allow us easier to move beyond the mind. I have an assumption that what's before the mind is holding us back. And as long as we keep pointing beyond the mind, and I do it myself as much as anybody else, that is not being addressed. And I think it's easy to go back to quantum theory or even the transformation of the cells of the body, because it's sort of like on the other side of the spectrum, so to speak. But then that bandwidth of the physical vital and how to relate to that or to become conscious of it so that it becomes a support foundation for going beyond the mind. I'm seeing that I'm still doing work there. And I'm also assuming that a more philosophical part of my mind, or that is more oriented towards the beyond mind, is happily concluding from its mental ego point of view that it knows enough about the vital and the physical, and it has control enough about that. And I think that's why I brought it back early, like, what is the relationship between the mental and mental ego? It's very justifiably thinks of itself as a force to reckon with, and the fact that there's a whole unconscious of the fight and the physical, that I'm assuming it's not very rare, and it's still very much an instrument for very mixed up there. This is just a reflection. I know it makes sense for anybody, but this is the space I'm in.
I think it's an interesting thing that mind, as Sri Aurobindo says, cannot control the vital and the physical. It has limitations in this control. And to control vital and physical, what you are suggesting, that we can deal with this already to the extent that it will support us in the journey beyond mind, beyond mind is necessary. Beyond mind is necessary to be in the mind to be able to control vital and physical. And this is the whole paradox. And this is the whole problem of this transition.
That's why I always assume, and I'm still partly with that, that I think there's also a place in the, you could say, the higher parts of the mind, and what you speak often is a reflective part, that doesn't necessarily even have to become spiritually inclined, but has a capacity to be organized vital and physical because it penetrates a deep enough. But I think that work of penetrating with awareness, the depth of the physical and vital, the reflective awareness, is something that I would say I've often taken for granted, and I still believe that tremendous support for suffering. And the orientation of the mind by nature is to say, let's skip that. Only when we are there we can do something on this intermediate lower level. And then your question is important. What is it that we really have accomplished based on our working with the yoga and our traditional professional ways? Where are we maybe missing steps, or do we need to reorient ourselves? That would be a valuable question or discussion. So I'm not saying we shouldn't go beyond, and I'm very clear that the more we can tap into the beyond and have it descend, working on us through the mental on the lower layer fully. But there is an inherent work to the, I would say, more enlightened mental or reflective awareness-based consciousness can do on those subliminal and lower layers. And I feel there's a lot of resistance in that in myself, and I'm assuming also in
others. You see, I'm wondering also very much about this. And working with the fingers, with the hands, on the instrument, it brought me, and this idea of infinite home, it brought in the infinite perception through the body. So basically, you don't go only there to tap the point where you want to go, but you see an infinite thing that you touch through the body, by the body. And the body adapts to it. and the body likes it, and it asks you, it starts asking you, it starts becoming an independent mind, so to say. When it does not know something, then it makes a mistake. They say, well, you have done a mistake. No, 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 it's not that. It is asking, it is its way of asking. Ooh, I am here, what shall I do now? Now, if you start going into that, you start explaining it, this kind of infinite touches. You touch that exactly where the spirit is pointing at. In your inner vision, the spirit knows, aha, I will touch that. It starts forming the vision. And your body starts touching it. And this is one of the fantastic things where the body becomes independent in its perception of that what is around, and it becomes equal to the perception of the spirit. It synchronizes with that. The other thing is that the vital is exactly the same, but it carries the movement. So where do you want to carry the movement? Towards what? And the question is happening something nowadays of that kind where you can see this kind of touch? I know, yeah, it is difficult for me, I am not an expert in supermind. So it is difficult to say if it is supramental or not, but I can definitely say it has this infinite vision and this infinite impact. And there are artists in the world, there is, I don't know if you know Sokolov, a pianist. You listen once to him playing whatever. We can listen together if you want. And there you hear, my God, but he's touching somewhere in the infinity, something there very consciously. And I have the same feeling as when I read some verses of Savitri, and suddenly, you know, this infinity which starts invading you. And I believe that the way for us to go, it is not beyond mind only, but it is beyond the physical and beyond the vital, that it accepts this infinity of the, finally, of the soul. Because then the soul can reach out into this infinity of its instruments and can start occupying that space, otherwise it cannot. Wherever there is a finite rigidity of perception and of mind, then it's finished. How do you want an infinity to infiltrate there and occupy the space? No?
I have a sense that it's also maybe limited to the language. If you speak going beyond, there's immediately a hierarchy implied, and I think it's more my sense of the key of the yoga. I mean, but this part of it, when this transition is the, we are told that it's the psychic being, the contact. So it's probably, you mentioned the purusha behind the mind, and we know from the tradition you have the purusha behind the vital and behind the physical. And how to get to the soul behind matter. What is actually Anna Maria Purusha? What's that? And I think we have the key actually through this, all those different layers of the Purusha or stationings. We are told the most simplest entry is through Chaitanya Purusha, through the soul spark, through the being which is growing us. And I think once we get in touch with that from that place one can be in that infinite space behind matter, behind the vital, and behind or beyond the mind. And that stationing, I guess, is what in that stationing is other than the attitude of receptivity, where actually those next steps can unfold. And we can be the observer and possibly the light in the process.
Actually, would you say about Anna Maria Purusha and all these Purushas? So, you can step into the self, not only through the mind, but also from the body, straight into that static Brahma experience, all from the vital. Because there is behind the self, that Purusha is the self, which expresses itself in this particular form, Annamaya Purusha, as this one Annamaya Purusha, this is another formation, individual formation, unique. But behind it, there is a Purusha self, which gives that supporting principle to this to manifest. Now, it's the same in the vital and the same in the mental. There is Annamaya Purusha with the will power to disengage from thoughts and other processes. Finishing thought. There was a thought about it, by the way, and since I see two hands, the thought kind of retreats.
It'll come through someone else.
Because he wanted to come, because you were already pointing to it. The difference between Chaitya Purusha, yes. The Chaitya Purusha is different from all these Annamaya Purusha. One has to distinguish that difference. Mother makes that difference. That Chaitya Purusha is turned towards the Supreme. It is the Supreme which is turned towards the Supreme, live now. It's self-conscious, dynamic portion of the dynamic truth, the portion of the supermind in the future. It will utilize the supermind of manifestation later as its own field of application. If you look carefully into this triple transformation, you will see it later. It's not the same static Brahman or Purusha behind supporting all of the manifestations. Not the same. And at the same time, on the highest level, it is the same.
That's interesting.
Philosophical excursions.
I feel that when life becomes into the physical, there is a permanent challenge to that life to be destroyed. And the process of overcoming this challenge creates the consciousness inside the life itself. And what I feel is the state of supramental quality is reached at the moment where the security is there that this destructive force cannot harm life as it really is. When this security is there, then we can go to this step where we are not fighting this process anymore against these destructive forces, but we go beyond that with the security that these forces are just a type of an illusion or a type of a process which is necessary to come there. And as much as we are in this consciousness that nothing whatsoever can destroy the life anymore, what Mother says at the end, that we have not to die anymore. So we are in this 100% absolute security that the essence of life cannot be destroyed. I think then we are at the beginning of this new form of life, where all these fears and all these insecurities don't play a role anymore, where there is a other type of security from where life can develop another quality.
For me, it's not so much to always say. The first step is, even when I was a teenager, I was very touched by one story that one Eskimo woman, she was old, and she thought she would go. Then she invited all the people, did a party with them, gave them all the things what she is, and after 2 weeks she went. And at this age, for me, was that is the way how to go, very consciously to go out of it. And I think that is helps more, that we are staying our consciousness there. And I think the most important thing is to change the consciousness, to the attitude towards all this, that we are immortal enough, that we really get the face and the truth that we are immortal. That is, I think, the first important step that we did, or that, well, what is good to support.
Mm-hmm.
There's a passage in the Human Cycle where Sri Aurobindo knows towards the end speaking about the possibilities now which exist as opposed to other stages of development, and especially with relation to the religious consciousness and the religious structure. And he's quite brutal in his treatment of the religious structure. And but he says that in this period of supramental change, it's essential that everyone confronts the possibility in their own way, that there cannot be any prescription regarding even faith, even skepticism, under this pressure of change, he says is essential, and that there's no reason for the questioning mind to accept faith at all in what is implied by this change, because it is able to work through that skepticism also. That so when the mind pulls back from the light because it has got burning questions, that's perfectly okay. It's a good movement. And when you are engaged in music and you're discussing with your instrument the infinity of the possibility of sound, that's as much of a channel as scientific...
Wait. It was not the infinity of the possibility of sound.
Well, whatever
sound,
you're discussing.
Sound has nothing to do with that.
Yeah. Whatever you're discussing as an artist with the possibility of existence, it's as much a tool of transformation as what we have done this morning, as reviewing the Shastra. Reviewing the Shastra and philosophical exploration and making decisions about ideals which should be realized is a perfectly legitimate activity in the transformational sadhana. And what we need is a flexibility that enables us to fully value all of the potentials that we have and all of the challenges that come up in us, and keep putting all of that in contact with the highest vibration that we can access, and then allowing that to actually work in those areas of difficulty. We don't need to think that we cut it off somewhere.
No.
And when we say that it's something else and it's new and it's beyond the mind and all of that, it doesn't mean that the whole field gets separated from that.
I have this question there, no? Because when you are working, then definitely you come on borders. It is like that.
Mm.
So there is the difficulty.
Mm.
So there is your work. Whatever field, I can go into gardening, my plants are dying, okay, this is my border here. What shall I do? So I have to definitely go there and seek this thing which has a horizon, an open horizon for any difficulty that I'm in. And then you start working on it. By working on it, what do? You sacrifice yourself. By the sacrifice, what does it do? It starts burning. So we are back again, no? Oh no, I don't know.
Back where?
I'm back.
Back to the magic.
Yes. Back to the magic.
Yeah.
You chose the example of the flowering garden, which has its limits by the plants.
No, I have limits.
No, yes.
I have limits in understanding the garden. That's why my flowers, they always die. What shall I do? You can give me a hint?
More water.
But the garden always has its cycle coming and going, coming and going. And the security that the plant which is dying will come back again in the same or in a more beautiful way the next time it is reborn overcomes this idea of the moment where the plant is dying and not flourishing. Because there is this beyond and the security of this beyond.
No, this is okay, but I try to build the beyond of my understanding of God.
I think I have some advice for you. It takes a lot of time and a lot of water.
Yes, and love is very important. It's very sensitive. Which you give more love than the other one, they're very sensitive.
This is entering into subjective aid, which God was emphasizing. There is a way to... That all is coming to us, that finally there will be only this individual which will be able to find his own unique expression, a unique way to access that power, which is universal, but it is also deeply individual. Since we are entering into the subjective age where everything is new and every time new in its relation to everything else, that subjectivism is a must. And we should see it as a positive, that's what Rod is saying. Positive in whatever degree, all the boundaries which we meet in our life are positive because they are bringing out some unique way of dealing with us being true to ourselves. To the reality.
Hi, Heather.
And if it is not so, then all these discussions are only to stimulate some kind of concentration of all of us towards that goal. When everybody has this unique way to work it out, which is fine. And excellent and beautiful to listen to different ways, different questions. It makes sense. At least in this setting.
But it comes also to Dania's point, what is this when the individual, since this idea is a thing I carried since long and I lived this in Germany, but here I lost it. I mean, it's so, how important is that you have the exchange with people and this to keep it, why have the, or you have to work on it, you have the time to work on it and to keep it running. And that is the collective, you know, the social, and you have here also in your presentation, the individual and also the social impact on all this.
Yes, this is one thing I would like to tell you, that this is the reason why I came. Mm-hmm. Because when I came first to Auroville, I just saw flame. It is burning. It was an impression. It is like these people see who drink too much. Anyway, I was not under an influence. I just saw it and I had the impression. When I come here, I would never sit like this in the ashram discussing something. Auroville is possible. In the ashram is impossible. Everyone is like in his world. It is not a collectivity except for the meditations. There no one speaks. Luckily. It's like...
So
that's why I was attracted to this place, and I thank you to give me the opportunity as an ashram comer.
I know that it's too late, so I'm not going to go on long, but I want to give the feedback to the group. That due to this ongoing work with Gebser and due to also the extracurricular movie and the discussion we had on Thursday and all, I woke up this morning and I really, I like to do journaling in the morning, and I really did apply what I'd been learning from Gebser and from discussions about these structures to a struggle that I'm in, an internal struggle. And it was very, very, very helpful. I'm not going to go on longer because we want to go. But I just want to say that it's working, at least for me, it's working very, very much. And I want to thank the whole group for
that. I want to say the same thing, but also I discovered and I see more and more that these structures are real. Real in the sense that they have their own reality, demands, their own voices, their own claims in real life. And we are dealing with them non-stop. And it is an ongoing thing. And the choices are made all the time. And it's very interesting. It becomes life, becomes rich and interesting because you apply that knowledge or that consciousness. You see it in others, you see it in yourself, you see it in choices being made, in movies. You see how people think, how they can't think otherwise, and why it is that way they present this particular way or this particular area. We saw two movies in a very interesting perspective. Actually, it generated many more thoughts afterwards, by the way.
Yes, the last one. Yes. So we'll do again this coming
week? We can do it again. We can go to what Aurelio was proposing, or to go into this magic structure which I prepared, the movie. Mm-hmm.
August Rush. Yeah.
Which is interesting. Yes, it will help. Because then that hearing, you will be perceiving that depth of magic.
Maybe first then, and then you can go and how it appears and where we travel.
I would say we could want to have another class. So is this are these movies available? Can I use it?
Yes.
Have it and
I can see the focus. The wonderful part was that watching with particular mind and make comments and discussions.
Yes, that was
the movie itself is a media. You want to see it.
Without the discussion, I would never have gotten it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I got so much out of it because of the discussion. Yeah. Really, so much.
And I could see that it is following in the day. You know, it's part of the life that you... How to say that? You saw the film, the discussion was very important, and the different possibilities of analyzing it. Mm-hmm. And then later at home, you continue mm-hmm. to think about it, and you see many, many other openings, ways of thinking, and so on. And it is accompanying the daily life. And this is what I wanted to say, being here, having these Saturdays, we are on a certain level of our being and trying to find that, all that, and to be more sensitive to what is life around us, our life here, life outside. So we are more direct involved in life since we do this work here. Yeah. And we are really involved in the development or in the change of those things. Just simply by our thoughts. Just by our thoughts and talking to other people sometimes. Opening something.
Well, I'm very happy to hear this feedback because makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I had an occasion this week to apply these principles also because I was being interviewed by a European filmmaking crew who are doing a very in-depth study of Auroville. And they had some very interesting and very difficult questions to ask. And you know, there's a tendency here to talk about the Tamil problem, for example, and to ask the question, is there some form of racism which is taking place here? And from different points of view. And if I realize that developmental psychology enables us to see structural patterns of development in different groups for different reasons which have nothing to do with race whatsoever. And while there is a danger of creating categories and making judgments and, you know, you're too mental and why don't you be more psychic and that sort of thing, in fact, if we look deeply into our socio-cultural predicament here, there are many things that can be understood quite well in terms of developmental psychology. And it's a very positive point of view, a positive outlook to take. You know, and it destroys racism, actually.
I don't know if it destroys racism, but it gives a context to it which allows you to look beyond the racism as something of a force in and of itself. It's part of a developmental structure. And fundamentalism the same.
Yeah, and then you have a teacher, you know, a teacher who's using magical methods to control a classroom.
Sure.
And then gets very offended if somebody doesn't recognize that the magic is supposed to be taking place.
Yeah.
You know, so that person is not using magic from a spiritual point of view, in fact. And so it's, you know, and then instead of condemning the person, you can simply see that they are in the grip of a certain psychological mode, and it could be better, it could be more enlightened, but anyway, it is what it is.
And yet, then you have to find a way where you can. I could accommodate the need developmentally of the teacher and of the students. There's still something that's required to address it rather than say, well, that's just what we saw happening and we leave it like that. Maybe there is something else that needs to happen also. Can we developmentally facilitate it, I
feel that especially Gebser and spiral dynamics can help us a lot to explain these problems, for example, with the Tamil villages in a better way that can be understandable for everybody. Because if we really understand this archaic and mystical and magical stuff, and then see what modernity and the modern thing is in between that, and then how difficult the interaction of all these levels in the daily life are, then outside people maybe also can become more comprehensive for the things that are going on, and even society itself can maybe understand in a better way why racism came up and what racism has, or colonialism or these movements has provoked, because there was no consciousness about this classification and there was no consciousness about what it means in daily life. There were just clashes of
values,
different memes,
different value systems.
And the people who were in these clashes were not conscious of what is happening to them.
I think this is the most important thing, that people can understand, become aware how things work. This is racism is something emotional, you know. I don't understand you and you don't understand me. And the best thing is that people will be in the situation that they try to understand and understand, because then there is no racism. If you understand why the other behaves like this, why he clings to his old attitudes, and we do it in a sense also. The understanding has to come, and this is by talking, by living, by all these things, opening up our minds. Who are we who can have more understanding or more intelligence that we try to do that, and then the other thing will come.
The point was that if we apply all these structures to individuals, to ourselves, we could clearly see what is happening with others. And that's the whole key. It is not. If you don't apply it to yourself and you want to understand the mental health structures works with others, it is not going to help. It leads only to greater racism, and finally to more.
Yeah.
Meanism.
Judgmentalism.
For instance, the film we saw, suddenly things, patterns in my life, in my past life, I didn't understand. And suddenly, while we were discussing it, things fell into their place, and I understood those things, which I'd never understood before, because I couldn't look at it in this way. And that was very important.
And that's why the emergence of individual is so crucial. That's where the unity lies. If I see all the universal structures within myself working, I can see them in others, and I can understand others.
Yet you're using the collective field, the exchange,
right,
and the intelligence of that that evolves as a means to be able to use, for instance, the movie,
right,
to look at yourself and to recognize. So I think it's both ways. As you said, it would have been different if you would have looked individually at the movie.
Yeah.
Now you've got the support,
yeah,
of a collective,
right,
and something went deeper as a recognition, perhaps not only individually, but also maybe examples in art that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It seems they're both necessary, they complement, as always.
Yeah, I was thinking when I would look at it at home, first time, I really would be lost.
Mm.
And I would have to see it 3, 4, 5 times unless I really get the message.
Mm.
If ever I get the message.
Exactly.
You never have time to really get the message.
It's the same with a text, like Sri Aurobindo's text.
Yes.
You know, if you start reading all of those chapters, you get quite lost and tired, and you don't realize that they're all saying the same thing. But if you take a few quotes from each chapter, then you see they all say this.
Still, there's so many
diversities.
So, shall we close with a moment of silence?
Yes. Sadly. Reluctantly.